Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, this experience has been both humbling and joyful for me. The ability to talk about these things with someone else and know that this message and what you're doing gets shared with these broader communities. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to participate in this and know that what I might know or might experience could help others. It's really humbling. So thank you for the opportunity.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Thanks, Leah, for joining me in a second conversation about our six psychological overlapping therapeutic themes of the coronavirus pandemic. So how are you, Leah?
Doing well.
Yeah. Well, we're
still dealing with, you know, Minnesota winter, but enjoying watching some snow fall out my window.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. Lovely. Well, to refresh your memory, Leah Seeger is a therapist, writer, educator, and activist in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Leah specializes in supporting people struggling with trauma, grief, addiction, and other challenges impacting their relationships and mental health. In her therapy practice at Lynn Lake Centers for Well-Being, Leah works with individuals, couples, and families. Leah describes herself as a systemic relational therapist who brings compassion, curiosity, and humor to the therapeutic process. She helps clients navigate the challenges that cultural norms, systemic issues, historical pressures, and personal values have on individuals or their relationships. As a transplant to Minnesota, a former advertising executive, a trauma survivor, and a self-identified creative weirdo, Leah attempts to utilize her wealth of experiences in the lifelong work of empathizing with, understanding, and supporting people. Leah currently serves on the board of the Minnesota Association for Marriage and Family Therapy as the External Affairs Chair. She was an adjunct professor in the Addiction Studies Graduate Program at St. Mary's University in Minnesota. And when not supporting others, Leah can be found reading, hiking, doing yoga, playing volleyball, or connecting with her favorite people over music, good food, and laughter. So I love that. And in our first conversation, we talked about the two themes, and we mentioned that they're not stages. You don't go from one to another, but they're themes of things that happened as the pandemic kind of emerged. So the first theme where we felt panic and anxiety that accompanied the news of a novel virus. And the second theme then that kind of overlapped the first theme is social distancing and other life-altering changes like virtual living, big adjustments that we've had to make that have really affected our well-being. And so we would like to fortify you with four of the other psychological and overlapping therapeutic themes so that you can navigate with your family and your staff and kind of lead the way through understanding, through our stories and their stories, just being able to connect with people's mental health and help them navigate kind of the troubled waters that we're all in right now. So that's a convoluted way of saying that we would just want to give you more information so you can help others and help yourself along the way. Isn't that right, Leah?
Yeah, more understanding of what we're going through, right? We can't address an issue if we don't talk about what those issues might be. So,
yeah. And go ahead. You were going to say something else.
No, I'm just grateful for the opportunity to like really think about these issues and give people the opportunity to think about how they might have impacted them so that they can determine how has that affected me? Is that still affecting? And how do I want to address that going forward?
Right. Exactly. And in our first conversation, you too mentioned that in growing up in kind of a complicated family, what came out of it for you was the ability to really talk about hard things. And you enjoy doing that all day, every day.
The importance of talking about hard things, right? Like the acknowledgement that when we don't talk about hard things and they're affecting us, they have a tendency to fester or create distance or create emotional pain. And so I love that my work allows me to help others, right? Like unburden themselves from that or process that out so that they're not carrying as much of that distress of the hard thing inside their body.
Yeah. And we also talked about Bronfenbrenner's ecological systems theory. I've included the model in our second conversation as well, just so that we can understand a little bit more about the systems that are also influencing us. So we start with our microsystem of our family and our school and health services and kind of our community of people. And then slowly we get more information and all the attitudes and ideologies of our culture and what's happening in our environment, all those things put some emotional intensity into our relating to each other.
Yeah. Like we do not develop in a vacuum. We are impacted by the people and the systems and the circumstances around us. Right. And those are going to alter or impact how we respond to distress or strain or big change like has happened in the pandemic.
Yeah. And so theme number three is systemic strain and disruption of well-being. It wasn't like we got that information about the virus and then there was a lockdown and then there was kind of an opening up, but we were kind of really noticing systemic strain, like we're not out of this, like we keep getting more information and more disruptions of our well-being. So the strain on hospitals we were aware of, I was hyper vigilant with the effects of small businesses. Worked their way through it. Our government helped with programs that were put in place with families as well. We all, you know, getting checks to help financially while people were at home in lockdown. But our workforce now, looking back, is really permanently altered. And we're working really differently. And people have gotten more creative in dealing with the physical need for touch and finding different ways to congregate online. And one of the things that's part of this systemic strain and disruption of our well-being is the trauma. We've had too much, too fast, too soon, which affects the system, our system, in how we address trauma. Could you talk with us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So a lot of people think, right, the word trauma is, right, like what I refer to as big T traumas or shock traumas, right? Like the things that we see on, you know, Law and Order television shows or, right, like when we think about trauma, very frequently people think about sexual trauma or, right, like what first responders or combat veterans go through, right? Like, and those are traumas. Those are absolutely traumas, but that's not all of what trauma is. Trauma is also what happens inside us when we have to adapt very quickly for the sake of our own survival, or we are put in environments in which we don't feel safe, right? Like that's trauma as well. And so like the idea that I've shared with many of my clients is the idea that like the pandemic is a trauma, right? Like it is this idea, this lack of sense of safety that a lot of people experience that really affected them inside their bodies, right? Not knowing whether I can hug this person, not knowing whether it feels safe to go do this thing with this person I care about, not feeling safe at my job, right? The people who are required to go to work, you know, the people who work in our gas stations and our grocery stores and our first responders, right? Like the idea that like, I still need to do this thing to survive, but it also, I'm being told that that's not safe, right? That's traumatic on a body to have those two things happening. I need this and it's not safe to do this, right?
Yeah. And as the numbers kind of increased, it felt more disastrous. And so we were forced into, so there were relapses and divorces. We were forced into creativity, which also provided kind of an upside. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So the acknowledgement that like human beings are designed to be in community, right? Like we're designed to be in connection. We're pack creatures. And so the idea that like when we were often isolated from other members of our pack and maybe right, like just in our home with our partner or with our partner and right, like children, we had to rely more heavily on those people inside our home during the lockdown timeframe, right? And so that created some good things in many environments, but it also created some serious hardships when we had relied on other people to be a part of our pack. And so the acknowledgement that like, yeah, people got creative, right? Like my spouse and I, we like to travel. That's a big thing that we had done to like broaden our horizon and feel connected to each other and feel connected to the world around us. We weren't able to do that. So we literally one week during the pandemic, we made food every night from a different place we had been to historically in the world, right? Like we had Spanish night and I made paella and we had Italian night. And we made, right, like homemade pasta. And like, so the idea of we're finding creative ways to connect, right, and that are utilizing what we know historically has helped for us. And that's a huge thing that we found. Oh, wait, we really like this. We really like making elaborate meals together. You know, other upsides can be the idea that like, oh, I'm now regularly connecting more with this group of friends that are spread across the country, right? Like we had, right, like at least monthly, right, like get-togethers where we would all sit down and find a way where the person in California and the person in South Carolina and the person in Ohio and me here in Minnesota would all sit together and catch up. So like we're finding ways to connect, right? Mm-hmm. And that creativity has helped a ton for so many people, myself included, as well as, right, like really opened up the awareness that like we don't need, or certain places don't need people to go into an office space, right? Like people who are dis and differently abled, right? People who have ways in which their brains work that allow them to have more flexible scheduling to work at a time that is more conducive to how their brains work, right? Like we've learned how to make room for those things as a result of the pandemic. So that's the upside, right? The downside is if your sole point of connection or your sole support system in your home, or if you didn't have a support system in your home, right? Like it became a serious strain, right? Like I've seen an uptick in, you know, couples really questioning, oh man, do I know if this person, if, right, like if we can get through this pandemic, but we're realizing some things about each other, about our relationship, right, that is really challenged. So, right, like I'm supporting a number of people through the divorce process. I'm supporting a number of people like really taking a hard look at their relationship with their spouse or partner and go, is this something where we're capable of repairing some of these things that became really clear during the time of the pandemic? I work with folks who struggle with addictions, and often, right, like this time frame has been a huge stressor, and a big part of being in recovery from an addiction issue is about community. Well, so many people were cut off from community in addition to having these additional stressors placed on them during the pandemic. And so that led to, well, if I don't have my community, I don't have my other outlets, it became a breeding ground for lots of relapse and return to problematic use or problematic behaviors.
Yeah, and we also experience this huge volume in misinformation. We're still in it.
Yes, we are.
So what are your thoughts about that?
Information, right? Like I like the idea of talking about the difference between information, right? Subjective truth and objective truth is something that I frequently talk with people about, right? Like because information, right? Like is so broad of a word, right? Like we now have right? Like television shows that are on news networks that are technically not news programming, but opinion programming, right? But it's being sent to people as though it is news, that it is objective truth, right? And if that objective truth is supportive or feels comforting, then your likelihood to believe that as objective truth is problematic because, right, if there is a different objective truth, but you're getting information that is comforting to you, right? Are you going to choose the comforting information or are you going to choose the objective truth? A lot of people choose the information that is supportive or comforting to them over the an object truth.
That's interesting. I haven't thought about it in terms of comfort.
Yeah.
Yeah, like psychologically, is that why it seems more plausible?
Well, this is where I go back to that systems model, right? The idea of like, what does it mean to you to adhere to this belief system, right? What does it mean to you to get information through these channels, right? Like a lot of community has been created around these belief systems, these types of information that may not be an objective truth, right?
But it's a form of connecting. So it's meeting some need.
Yeah. I feel, right, if I can feel rage with somebody else, right? Or I can feel, right, that I'm being minimized or harmed by someone else, then that gives you an enemy, like and a group of people to push back against. There's a significant polarization in our society that comes from those things. And I will add to the reality, people be profiting off of that, right? Like the idea that like a lot of social media platforms, a lot of media channels, right, like benefit financially from keeping people as a captive audience. And so they might continue to feed information that, right, like riles someone up or keeps a person's attention, right? Because that generates ad revenue. The old ad executive in me comes back out and goes, oh, look, that's how that works.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yes, having that insight is very helpful.
Yeah. When we have people's eyes on something, right, so there's a value in maintaining that attention. And so, like, I see how these different variables connect to each other, where we've been super isolated, right?
Yeah.
We want connection as human beings, right? We want to feel safe. We want to feel secure. We want to feel supported. We don't want to feel alone. And so like sometimes these information channels or these information directions, right, like help people feel that way. Maybe it's in a sense of rage. Maybe it's in a sense of community. Maybe it's in a sense of both. But and then when that channel, whether it be the social media mechanism or the news network, right, is profiting, right, via ad revenue from keeping people's attention there, why wouldn't you continue to feed that information to the individual or to the group?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that leads us kind of into theme 4, which is we move from systematic strain and disruption of well-being and kind of our different coping mechanisms. We move into semi-opening flurry. So kind of what do I do? Everything is hybrid. There's also this nuance coming about rural effects and urban experiences and challenges, again, that can relate to what you have named of people, you know, looking at subjective truth and objective truth and maybe believing for comfort's sake or for a connection's sake or some meeting of need, you know, things that are not truthful, but also because we have different experiences for those of us who live in rural communities and those of us who live in urban experiences, I feel like they've been really exploited. And instead of finding ways for us to come together through our different experiences, it has really created an inability for us, a ripple. I've got some relationships that are irreparable because people have been so that the way in which the news has come to them and what they believe in is they're putting that before their relationships and their connection with those who disagree with them.
And right, like this is where it gets super nuanced from a systems perspective, right? Because the idea that like, I as a therapist have the capacity to go like, okay, how do I step out and right, like look at the forest and not just an individual tree here. But like, I grew up in a rural community. I have family members who still live in rural communities, and I obviously live in an urban environment and have done so for almost 20 years now. There's a big difference between how the pandemic impacted people in urban environments versus more rural environments, right? Like more urban environments were traditionally hit harder by the pandemic because of how the virus was spread. And so like, if you live in an urban environment, you are more likely to have known someone who is sick, known someone who has passed away, right? Like known someone who was directly impacted by COVID. Early on in the pandemic, right? Like more rural communities, because less density of population frequently had less, right? Like early on in my understanding of things, yeah. Early on had yeah. less impact. Because if you are locked down, if you aren't interacting with each other as frequently, if you are living further apart from other people, the less likelihood that you're going to be negatively impacted was possible. And so, right, like it started to create what was already like there has always been like a bit of a rural versus urban experience in a lot of places in our country. And I think the pandemic exacerbated that in a lot of ways, right? Because it's, if you've never known somebody to get sick, if you've never known somebody to die, if you don't have family members who are working in healthcare, right? Like you might not see the objective truth of there are lots of people dying, right?
Yeah.
Instead, you are feeling the negative effects of what's happening to your business. Right? Like lockdowns had serious negative ramifications on a lot of businesses.
Yeah. Especially, so, right, yeah, right.
Right. Like if the family farm is struggling, or you know, your mother's store is going under because that's a huge loss to people. Right. And if you're not actually seeing people get sick or people dying, right, it's really easy to go like, well, this is more important than, right?
And if your daily routine hasn't been altered that much, like I've talked with farmers and they still continued business as usual. You know,
they have to.
They're feeding people. Yeah. Trucks are coming in and out. But they could take the measures because they were on their individual farms. And the other part of the semi-opening flurry, in December of 2020, the vaccines became available. And there were anecdotal also stories of hope. And how did your clients kind of navigate their way through this? Or what was your experience helping clients navigate your way through this theme of, you know, we were getting hopes of, you know, that because the vaccines were here, we were feeling safer, we could get out more, still wearing masks, still social distancing, but having small gatherings, businesses back to restaurants, like, you know, some tables were separated. And so restaurants made lots of alterations. Hairstylists, you could go back, get your haircuts, and they were taking temperatures. And, you know, they also set up ways in which they were trying to keep their clientele safe by wearing masks while people are getting their hair done. And cashiers, you know, they had the partitions set up, and between wash basins, they have curtains and some enclosures there. So the hybrid methods of getting together seem to increase our happy factor a little bit.
Yeah, we had an opportunity, right? Like, and it's so impressive how many people, right, like found way. How do we traverse the need for safety from the virus with the need for, right, like connection, the need to continue to run our business? That hybrid effect was really beautiful, in my opinion, right? The ways people found ways to do that stuff, the innovation and right?
Yeah, and I was just hopeful that less people would die. And
we had a hope.
Yeah, exactly. And so theme five, then we got new news. You know, so COVID fatigue kind of settled in, and effects. What are some of the effects of prolonged denial that you're seeing?
Well, I think the problem is like our culture, right? Like back to that systems approach, right? Like looking at like greater culture. A lot of US culture is very much about like, can I have it now? Right? Like, can, right? We've gotten used to like, can I get it now? And so much of how our culture is sped up to like support that, right? I can DoorDash myself some, right? Like Indian food, or I can order something from Amazon and have it here tomorrow.
Well, and the processes in place for businesses are, you know, in time, on time shipping.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it was like you could get anything. All of our systems were built on speed and quickness.
Yes. And the recognition that, right, like so much of our culture is about have it now, get it now, make it happen this moment. And the idea that like COVID didn't and science doesn't function that way, right? Like the idea that like illness and novel viruses, right, like don't function that way. And this is where I have to be kind of careful because I'm a clinician, right? Like a mental health clinician. I'm not a researcher. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist in this space. But at the same time, right, like as we are seeing, right, new variants come forward, as we're seeing, right, like the recognition that, wait, oh, this isn't just going to be done, right? Like the frequency I've heard people say, I just want this to be done. I just want it to be over, right? Like that aligns with our culture, right? That we do get to have now and done and finality, right? Like we can binge watch the entire season of something versus, right? Like what we're actually experiencing in COVID is like, oh, wait, we're not done.
Yeah, we've got a Delta variant and an Omicron variant, and who knows what's next.
We have a, right, like we have a, this isn't done, this isn't 100% safe, right? Like the idea that like we are having to balance individual and collective needs with individual and collective safety, and there's a lot of variation in what is, right? Like my individual safety is different than that of an immune compromised person, right? My individual safety is different than that of a person who works in a hospital setting or is a first responder, right? Or is working retail. So like we're having to go like, how do we balance all of these variables? And a lot of people after a year and a half or 2 years of like, are just got a whole lot of nope. We're just done, right? We want it to be done.
Yeah. And along with that, we had the insurrection in January 6th. So there was another uprising, and this was then on a national level, and now it's alarming our democracy. And so it brought our terror to the next level.
Well, there's the idea that, again, right, like we are watching, right, something that is a belief or a value that I would hope most Americans hold, that our democracy is an important feature of who we are as a culture, as a U.S. culture, right? And to see that being threatened, and I'm going to, right, do my best to try to approach this from a both and approach, right? Like the people who, right, like were a part of the insurrection, were part of, right, the assault on the Capitol that day, those people firmly believed that, right, like the election was stolen. They firmly believed that Donald Trump deserved to be or should be president. And so, like, I disagree with them. That is not, right, like the objective data they have. But like then the rest of us who do not believe that, who believe that Joe Biden fairly won the election and are following the objective data that supports that, are saying, wow, these people who are on the grounds assaulting police officers, looting our Capitol, right? Like they want to overturn an election, and that's scary, right? It's the first time that we are watching, right, like our Capitol be taken over by other people. We're watching the tweets of Congress people who are hiding. We're watching people, right, and take over, right, like spaces that are meant for elected officials. And that was terrifying, right? And it's another big fearful thing that is happening on top of, right? Like, it's not like the COVID wasn't happening at that moment.
Right.
Right. Like, we feel like those of us who, right, like, we're still trying to respond to the needs of the pandemic have, you know, yet another layer of oh, wow, there's another big scary thing happening. And so like trauma on top of trauma is hard on the body, is hard on our mental health.
So what do you feel are the effects of prolonged, is it denial?
I don't, right, like denial is a tricky word for me as a therapist, right? Because like very rarely are we in denial of something, right? Like unless there is reason for that. And I know I use the word reason and people are going to think like reasonable, rational, but like we all reason from our own experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? My reasoning, right, like comes from my experience in my personal life, in my training as a therapist, and other people's reasoning comes from their places in life. And so the idea that like, the effects of prolonged extreme polarization and extreme what I'm calling tribalism, right, like I think there are some serious long-term effects that we're going to, that's part of the reason why I say we're going to be navigating the effects of the pandemic many, many years to come, because how, when, if it is possible to repair the damage done by the past couple of years, that's yet to be said. That's a thing that's a long ways out, in my opinion, in terms of the work it will take to do that repair.
Yeah. Well, and I think maybe with this theme, instead of the effects of prolonged denial, is really the effects of prolonged extreme polarization and extreme tribalism, like you're saying,
yeah,
seems more fitting. And in so, not surprisingly, the outlook for 2022 remains bleak, according to the article in which helped you and I connect, mm-hmm, through the New York Times, which was entitled, "We Surveyed 1,320 Therapists Across the Nation. They're Worried About Mental Health in the U.S. 6 out of 10 therapists surveyed saying the high demand for services would remain at current levels for some time. So you are in a community, like you mentioned, of, you know, there's 150 to 160 therapists who work through the Lynn Lake Centers for Well-Being. How are you all working? Now, you're working independently. Let's just talk business for a minute. You're in a community that offers therapy, but you're not employed by Lynn Lake Centers for Well-Being.
I'm an director at Lynn Lake Centers for Well-Being, and that's the way a number of, right, like therapy practices can work. So what that means is like the organization Lynn Lake Centers for Well-Being does a beautiful job of providing, right, the structure, right? Like they have the mental health record system, they have the billing systems, they have the marketing processes, they set up the emails, they set up beautiful locations so that we as therapists can contract with Lynn Lake to, right, like have access to those things being met for us. And then we get to go in to these spaces and do the work with our clients. And so the way that this, right, like my organization is working is like we're very, there's a kind of a, been a constant expansion of this organization since I've been with it, right, to expand locations, to add therapists, to add not just therapists, but other service providers to, right, like look at what creates well-being. We have not just therapists, but psychiatric nurse practitioners for medication support. We have testing specialists. We have acupuncturists. We have nutritionists. Right. So that like the idea that we can like holistically serve a client. So like the reality is like I might work with an individual or I might work with a couple and another therapist might, like if I'm working with a couple, another therapist might be working with the individual. And that individual might also be seeing, right, a nutritionist for, right, like nutrition support. Or they might be working with one of our medication providers, the psychiatric nurse practitioners, for medication support for their mental health. So the recognition that we are starting to, or at least I hope, definitely within Lynn Lake Centers for Well-Being, but I hope as a broader perspective, we're looking at like, how do we holistically serve the needs, the mental health needs of this individual, knowing that it's more than just one-on-one talk therapy frequently that a person needs in order to feel supported during these challenging times. But yeah, we're seeing, you know, more requests for medication support. We're seeing more requests for, oh, you know, I'm struggling personally, but I'm also struggling relationally. So very frequently, we do a lot of referrals back and forth to each other, right? Like myself as a couples and family therapist, right? I very frequently get requests from, you know, the clinicians who work more with just individuals saying, hey, do you have room for a couple? Do you have room for this family? And so like that systemic approach to serving the mental health needs of people, I think is something that's really important. And I hope that continues to grow in our culture, that we look at the person holistically, right? Like in my perfect world scenario, right? Like logical thinking, right? Like that, like physicians would be looped into this structure, right? Structure as well, so that we could all look at like the collective experience of a person and addressing their physical and mental health needs, knowing that they're often connected.
Nice. And the last part of this theme, what do you feel are some coping mechanisms that can help people during this time of COVID fatigue?
Yeah. So like knowing when to what actually rejuvenates you, right? Like very frequently people think things that are actually a distraction or a way of escaping are not actually rejuvenating, right? Like the frequency that I have to ask people, I'm like, so is TikTok actually helping you, or is social media helping you rejuvenate? Because if it is, great. But if it is simply an escape from what you're feeling, I don't know if that's helping you. We all need to escape, you know, a little bit. I'm not mad at that. But like, if that's all we're doing, I have concerns, right? Like, what else do you need to actually like rejuvenate or process out or rest, right? Like, and so in addition to like, okay, what type of connection opportunities do you have? They might be imperfect, right? They might be different, right? If a person is an introvert, they're probably really cool with, yeah, I'm fine seeing people virtually here and there, versus, you know, the more extroverted people are more like, I need to see human beings in person. Yeah. So like knowing what you need to actually rejuvenate. And if that is stepping away from the screen, if that is moving more, if that is connecting more, whether that's, right, like connecting with persons, connecting with community, connecting with, right, you know, movement, connecting with spirituality, whatever it is that like truly rejuvenates you, right? Like really pay attention to like, do I feel rejuvenated after I've done this thing? Or do I just feel like I have like stepped away and escaped what I'm feeling in the moment? So asking people to really think about what truly rejuvenates you, and how do we make sure we make room for that?
Beautiful. That's wonderful. Yes. And our last theme is the long-term effects of misinformation about our public health and freedoms.
Yeah.
So false information, intentional disinformation spread, you know, continue to spread through social media. There's also this huge rise that is rippling around the country, I mean, around the globe, really, of anti-vaxxer protests. And the World Health Organization declared an infodemic, a new word. It's of misinformation affecting our public health. So there's cognitive biases like jumping to conclusions, or confirmation bias, which are attitudes we notice are becoming more polarized. There's a belief perseverance where no matter what information comes to counter my belief, I'm not going to believe it. I'm going to persevere and stick with that particular belief. And illusory correlation, which is falsely believing that there's an association between two events or two situations. What is your experience, or what are your thoughts about cognitive biases and the polarization? You've mentioned a little bit of it, but from a systems perspective, tell us more.
Sure. So the recognition that like we use phrases like confirmation bias and belief perseverance as though that they are inherently bad things. And like what I try to do as a therapist is go like, okay, what purpose are those things serving? And are we, right, like acknowledging that, right? Like when we say belief perseverance, like a person who is unwilling to change their belief about something when they are presented with, right, objective information, right? Like I have to ask myself the question, what is the value of holding on to that belief for that person?
Yeah, right? That's good. Yep.
And so, like, if I can question that, right, like, what is the value of holding on to the belief? What depthful meaning is attached to this belief for this person that, like, throwing more information at them is not going to change this unless we, like, get to understand what the meaning behind that is, yeah. Right? Like, because if that meaning says that you have to deny something that is core to your identity or core to your sense of community, it's understandable that that would be hard for a person to change that belief. And so having to be able to go like, oh, right, like this is important to you from a community standpoint, or this is important to you from another perspective. And if we can approach with curiosity, we're going to do a better job of like addressing these issues than if we just keep throwing objective information at a person who's receiving like a whole other series of information, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then when it comes to confirmation bias, right, the idea that again, like that is an inherently natural, not saying helpful always, thing, right? Like real simplistic version of this, right? Like my favorite colors are like teal and like blue and purple, right? And so if I was presented with two rooms in which I could go relax in at the end of the day, and one is teal and blue and purple, and the other one is pink and cream and gray, I'm going to choose the teal and blue and purple room, right? Not the pink and blue and or the pink and cream and gray room. My sister-in-law might like love that pink and cream and gray room, right? We choose the things that are comforting to us. So when we talk about confirmation bias, I go like, why is that comforting? What is that doing for you, right? And like question that versus question the person, right? Like my favorite belief system is that people are not problems. Problems are problems. And so how do we get the beliefs, the meanings, the right, like rigid connection to those beliefs and why they are present in that person in order to determine is change possible here?
Good. Excellent. That's really insightful. And another aspect to all of this too is there's many aspects and descriptions to our experiences of loss and grief.
Yeah.
Can you talk about finite and ambiguous grief?
Sure. So like, imagine this is, right? Like I think of all things as a spectrum, not a binary, right? Like finite and ambiguous are like two binary terms, but like, it's really a spectrum. Like when we lose something, for example, right? Like if you think about a death, right? Like that is a very finite loss, right? Like my father passed away 9 years ago. He is gone, right? It is a finite experience. I will never, right? Like see him in the body or speak to him face to face ever again, right? That's the finite loss that I experienced there versus the recognition that my father had Parkinson's disease. So for 18 years, I watched this disease take things from him, right? Some of his abilities and skills. And so that was an ambiguous loss for me, right? Like that my dad as a body, as a person was still there, but his capability to do the things that I hoped for or expected of or got used to for him, those were taken from me. And that's it. That was the ambiguous loss. And so we're dealing with, right, like this compilation of like very serious finite losses and very serious ambiguous losses simultaneously right now. Right.
Yeah. And we're also dealing with individual grief and kind of the collective grief. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the one that's probably even harder to get your head around right now because like, okay, like individual loss is, right, like if I had lost someone to COVID, right, like my individual experience of that loss is different than looking at, right, like when we have honored those we have lost to COVID, right? Flags planted on lawns or I walked into a mall one day and they had hearts on a series of windows for every person in my particular neighborhood who had passed due to COVID, right? Like and feel that weight of communal grief that, oh, each one of those hearts signifies a life. My one person might be one heart on that wall, but like how I'm feeling the weight of all of that is like a communal relief, a communal sense of grief. And then how we do rituals around grief and loss have had to change so drastically, right? Like people who have passed away that we didn't get to honor in the way that we normally would, right? Like funerals are frequently a place in which we do collective or communal grief. And in certain cases, we haven't been able to do those, or we haven't been able to do those the same way, right? Socially distanced or masked or less, not hugging or whatever the case may be. And then if we draw this out to a bigger system, when we think about our culture or our country, the reality that like some people, right, are holding that collective grief, are feeling the sadness of, right, like, what is it, 850 plus thousand people lost. And some people are saying, oh, that's not real, right? So we're not actually in community around this grief, whereas other events in our culture, we have built a sense of community, communal grief or collective grief. On when 9/11 occurred, there was a communal, right? Like there was a collective grief. When, right, like other things have happened in our culture, right? Like Sandy Hook, think of these larger events, right? Like we have this community mourning around these losses. Yeah. And so trying to balance the individual versus the collective, the finite versus the ambiguous, right? And that's a lot to carry, right, on top of all these other stressors that people are facing.
One way I learned from you today, really looking at when people are moving into cognitive biases, looking, you know, underneath that of the mm-hmm. needs and trying to understand the other person would be a supportive way to keep your connection mm-hmm. with someone in which you have a different relationship about the information or the, you know, if someone is believing misinformation and they're and they have a lot of reasons behind it, really understanding, like go through an empathic way of understanding them. What are some ways in which other ways that we can keep our connections or not, or change up our connections with each other?
Yeah. So like, empathy is a real challenging thing to do. Empathy requires yourself to like, right, like step away from your own feelings about a situation and sit with the feelings of another person. And so I don't expect that realistically of everybody. I don't expect everyone to have the bandwidth for empathy, but like I do have a desire to go, okay, how do we do connection or at least curiosity about the other person up until a point, right? Like, and the point can be, right, like, when does this legitimately cause harm to you? Not like physical harm, right? Like, obviously, if someone throws a punch, not saying you have to keep that person in your life and be curious and empathetic to their experience. But like, if a person is emotionally unhealthy for you and you don't have the bandwidth to be curious about their experience, like acknowledge that for yourself. And you can say that I care deeply about this person, right? Like, or I care about, right, something about this person, but I might not have the bandwidth to truly be curious or empathetic about their experience. And if I don't, I have to own that for myself, right? Be able to, how do I step back, right? And be able to go like, I can care about this person. I can respect their rights to their belief systems, but I don't agree with this person. And honestly, like those belief systems can cause me or people I love harm. Then I might have to go like, how realistic is it for me to be truly like empathetic and curious about this person's existence? And if I can't, right, like name that, own that for yourself and be able to go like, how do I then like go, how can I separate in a way that is healthy for both of us?
And how can business owners navigate that? Because many of them have had their businesses threatened when people aren't masking up, their businesses driven away, either because your business is requiring masks or because it isn't. You know, how, and employees, you know, are on the spectrum also in with mandates and rules. So how can business owners, is there one, I know there isn't one way, but right? But is there some way that we can start thinking about this in a newer way?
Well, like in all of this, I would like to ask people to think about, like, what are your values as an organization? What are your values as a person? Right. And really start to think from the perspective of, yes, we do have mandates and, right, like obligations that are asked of us by, right, like greater institutions and governments, and like being able to say, like, I have to abide by this. If you choose not to, that is your right to not choose to, but I can't serve you or I can't continue to employ you, right? Like, I have to follow these rules in order to keep my business. And then at the next level, to be able to go like, and these are my values as a as an organization, and like be able to go like, I stand by these values, I stand by these belief systems. If this isn't the right space for you, right, then you have the right to go elsewhere, right? Like, you have the right to work elsewhere, you have the right to shop elsewhere, you have the, and I know that might mean a temporary shift in, right, like income. And that's really hard given what people have been through. But like, I would ask business owners and workers to like truly go, what are my values? Right. And if I'm willing to like live those values, right, and put those out there in the world, then I'm going to have to like acknowledge that in this polarized world that we're living in, that's probably going to result in some consequences. If I'm truly like rooted to, anchored to those values, then it's okay if I go through those consequences.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, this has been really helpful, and really it feels good to actually, you know, talk through this as themes, six mm-hmm. psychological and overlapping therapeutic themes, so we can kind of understand, you know, that we're going through this all together at different paces, different ways, and it's okay. There's a lot to navigate.
Yeah, there's a lot of complex overlapping variables here, individual personal values, individual sense of community, right? Values and belief systems in a given community. And we're trying to navigate that all faster than our brains and our bodies can realistically process. And it's reasonable that we're going to need to take time to check in with those values, determine how we want to honor them, determine how we want to communicate them with others.
It's a beautiful way to finish out our conversation. Thank you so much, Leah, for giving us these insights.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is lovely.
Okay, good. And thank you all for tuning in and gathering six psychological and overlapping therapeutic themes that you can use to as ways in which you can work your way through this coronavirus pandemic. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Monfred de Notre-Mer, brother from another mother. Thank you for all your efforts, and we'll see you all next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.